3, 2, 1.
It's just also just important to make things that come from the heart. And if you're having fun and if it comes from the heart, that feeling is contagious and people will get sprinkles of that and be drawn to it. And I think that applies to not just DJs and musicians. Now wellness has turned into kind of a caricature of itself. And I think it's just kind of up to us to figure out what works for us and what doesn't, whether it be nutrition or supplements or any kind of activities or whatever. Ultimately, a big part of all that work is learning to like listen to yourself and
absolutely
trying certain things out and be like, do I feel better when I do this?
Alan Maklovich, aka A-Track, is a Canadian DJ, turntablist, record producer, and founder of the record label Fool's Gold. He started really young. He won his first DJ championship at the age of 15 and collected 4 more world championships by 18. He's known for using his highly technical turntable skills and scratching into his genre-spanning work. His craft caught the attention of Kanye West, and A-Track became Kanye's original tour DJ. This led him to starting his record label, Fool's Gold, where he continues to develop the careers of several artists. One early on being Kid Cudi. You remember one of our favorite Kid Cudi songs, Day and Night? Well, we have that classic thanks to A-Track. One of my favorite things about Alan is he is so multifaceted. I love talking to him about tech and politics. He is an artist, a leader, a mentor, a brother, who he also makes music with sometimes. And his constant evolution of all of these things is exactly why he is where he is today. We will be talking about all of this and more. Hello, 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 Alan. I am so happy to have you on here. What is the origin of the name A-Track?
Being a kid. because I started DJing so young. A-Track, the name A-Track... It's funny because it also boils down to me being French Canadian and like, so, you know, at an age where I maybe didn't fully master English, it just sounded cool to me. My brother, who's a couple of years older, was writing graffiti. We were all just sort of like embracing hip hop and learning about hip hop culture. And part of that was graffiti. So he was kind of like going out at night, tagging his name. So, you know, when you write graffiti, you have a tag, you have like a sort of nickname. So I was kind of like, well, I want a name. And, you know, so I would just kind of like doodle stuff on paper, but I never actually went out and tagged anything. And A-Track was just what, you know, one name out of many. I feel like every week I'd just come up with some sort of name that I would doodle. And, you know, the A, my first name is Alan. So it's like, obviously, that, and it, I guess, you know, it sounds like an 8-track. It sounds like something, but I don't even think I knew what an 8-track tape was. I just knew it sounded like something. And around that time, I started messing around with DJing. And then suddenly it was like, well, I need a DJ name. And, you know, it just so happened that my hip hop name that week or something was 8-track. So then,
and
then
it just stuck forever.
It stuck. Yeah. I mean, the thing that's good is, you know, it doesn't mean anything, so no one else thought of it.
That's funny. Has there ever been a time where you've either not regretted it, but have rethought it or wanted to consider changing it?
No, I'm pretty stubborn, so I'll stick to stuff. I mean, but that's why it's spelled without a C, was just, you know, me trying to messing around with letters and seeing what looked right in terms of calligraphy or whatever. So, you know, I spelled A-Track without a C because the letters just look better that way. So, of course, my name has been misspelled a bunch between, you know, the obvious A-Track with a C-K, but then a lot of people would write 8-Track, which is not wrong. It's just not my name. and then when I won my first DJ competition, the organizer/host announced me as A-Train. For no reason at all, he just kind of, you know, messed up on the spot. And then...
Where was this?
This was in Italy. It was the world finals of the first DJ battle that I did. But this was a British guy. And, you know...
I was going to say, was it like New York where it was like a mix-up?
Yeah, he was probably thinking of New York, but he called me A Train, and then there was another event the next day after I'd won that championship, and he called me A Train again. Like that week, he just could not think A Track. And yeah, there's probably like 30 competitors in this thing. He's trying to remember people's names to give him a bit of credit. I was new on the block, so my name wasn't established or anything. So he just kept calling me A Train. So that was a thing for a little while, because then there was a video of this championship that other people saw. So then people would be like, "Oh, A Train, what's up?" And then there was another DJ called A Train. But anyways, no one has A Track because it doesn't mean anything. So that's probably why I never changed it.
I'm like really big on names and the meaning of names. Like, literally, this podcast and the essence of this podcast is based on what my name means. And I kind of think it's cool that your DJ name is something that doesn't mean anything, but it was like you started on this blank, empty slate and decided, I'm going to like create the definition and embody whatever this is, because now your name is iconic and it literally is like you can only think about you and your style and your approach to DJing and your like specific story. So I think that's really cool too.
Thanks. Also, it starts with an A hyphen. So when pocket dialing was a thing, and I was the first name in a lot of people's address books, I would get a lot of butt dials, like really a lot.
I love your name. I enjoy it. I think
Thanks.
it's awesome. How is your heart doing these days?
Ooh, depends what day you ask me. I'm okay now. I was kind of in a weird place earlier in the week. But I think there's just something about this whole, extended period of quarantine and lockdown, that just feels like total isolation. And there's days where, like, you know how like on the mind body tip, like if I'm physically fatigued, if I'm just tired, then it'll get to my mood and it'll get to my heart and it'll just get to everything. So I was really tired over the weekend, and it just meant that I also just felt weird overall. But then after a few days, I felt better.
Is fatigue these days for you different or similar to what fatigue was while you were touring?
I think it's different because it's harder to tie to explain it. Like in normal times, I'm on a plane many days a week, most weeks, and performing late nights most weekends. So if I'm tired, it's easy to be like, well, yeah, I was up till 4 a.m. last night. You know what I mean? The fact that I'm just home for months and months and months, and there's days or entire weeks where I'll just feel wiped out, it's harder to sort of draw an arrow to something and be like, of course, it's because blah, blah, blah. I've kind of given up on trying to justify how I felt since lockdown started and just try to accept it. Be like, okay, today I feel like shit, or oh, cool, today I feel great. And, try to surf through the day accordingly. I've been having this surfing analogy, even though I've never surfed, but like, I just feel like every day comes with like certain waves when during this lockdown thing where I just kind of like look ahead and I'm like, oh, it's this kind of thing today. All right. And you can't you can't justify or explain that certain days have good days or bad waves or good waves. You're just kind of like, oh, they're high today. Let me try to adjust my expectations accordingly. Like, oh, I'm really doing like killing it today. Awesome. Riding these waves, and I think a lot I'm used to finding explanations for things, and I've just given up on that completely. Like, I can't. It's like, it's pointless.
Well, I think we look for explanations for things in times where we don't have so much control over our situations, what's happening in the world, and we just try to rationalize things and understand things. You have a very technical brain. That's kind of how you entered this music space as essentially a child prodigy who just, you kept your head down, you focused, and you engineered yourself to be so high performance that you were able to sustain touring the world and staying up late and putting on these shows and competing and running a label and doing all of these things for so long. What about being so high performance have you now been able to kind of deconstruct?
It's a subject that interests me a lot. Like the whole idea of someone as a high performance machine.
Mm-hmm.
I could talk about just that for hours. And the effects of stress and fatigue and jet lag and you know, pressure from the public, and also, you know, the unexplainable ways that you'll feel on certain days, but also, like you were saying, the ability to sometimes just keep your head down and know, like the way that your body knows when there's a day that's just important and you just have to deliver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I've tried to learn and kind of improve the way that I treat myself over the years, because as you mentioned, for the first many years of, you know, this career of mine, this music career of mine, you know, I started with these DJ competitions, right? Like over time, I got into other aspects of DJing and producing and getting involved, you know, doing my record label and other cultural projects. But this whole thing started with the most technical branch of DJing and competing and training for something for months to then have to show up on stage and execute it well once. It's way more similar to being an Olympic athlete than being another kind of musician. It's not like being in a band. It's really like being a competitive athlete. That's what I started with. So I trained myself early on to just have this, you know, kind of an ability to tune out the outside when needed and just focus and execute and, you know, kind of take my mind to a place of comfort and, you know, pretend like I'm in my basement or whatever and compete or perform something in front of a crowd, and also know when I'm the specific moments in a performance when I'm able to sort of acknowledge the crowd and look up and interact with them, and other moments where I need to fully concentrate. Applying that to my life and doing that when I was still a high school student and having to also complete schoolwork. And I think for many years, as I sort of developed my DJ path and got into other aspects of music and whatnot, I kept that same approach of prioritizing, you know, just the output and being able to deliver. And also, if there was certain obstacles, sort of like bulldozing through them, fighting through them, whether it be if I didn't feel well certain days or if I had a creative block for a while, I was just sort of like, no, must finish, like, you know, human bulldozer.
Well, who did you look to, or what did you look to in those moments when you were like, must continue, but like you were at zero?
I don't know. I was just sort of hyper focused with, you know, continuing down a path of things, certain things that worked for me at first, and you know, it's also genuinely in love with this thing that I was doing and just wanting to continuously get better at it.
But, did you know at the time what you wanted from it?
Vaguely. I mean, it's funny also, sometimes I'll stumble upon old interviews that I did at that age when I was 15, 14, 15, 16. And there was also a very rational side of me that would say, you know, they would ask me, well, is this your career? Is this, are you going to do this for your whole life? And for a while, my like blanket answer was like, well, I'm going to do this for a few years, but I'm still in school because I'm not sure if I can still do this when I'm 40. By the way, I'll be 40 in a year. So, but at the time I was like, I'm not sure how long I'll do this. So I'm also pursuing school, and then hopefully this DJing thing works out. So I was just like really passionate about scratching and DJing, and as soon as I entered these competitions, I won stuff right away. So I was just kind of like, whoa, I got to keep this going. And then when I stopped competing, I wanted to learn how to make music. And then that was a whole new set of challenges. And everything was just kind of like must learn, must improve, must deliver for years and years. And then, every X amount of time, every now and then, I would just like suddenly get sick or be fatigued or this and that. And for a long time, I didn't understand why. And for a long time, I was not good at like giving myself breaks, and or I felt like I needed to earn a break, reach a certain milestone, finish something before I could actually go hang out with my friends or do something social or whatever. And even if I was, if I had a creative block, I would just be like, no, I have to get to this sort of point in the, I have to get at least this thing finished before I can go and enjoy my weekend. And it just wouldn't work also. And it took a long time for me to understand that you don't have to like earn time off, and just like understanding balance and how important the sort of like nourishing parts of the day or the week or life, how vital those things are, and the fact that you can't really have one without the other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to the point where even just in recent years, like 5 years ago, I figured out a whole bunch of like nutrition stuff that I ended up changing, and which helped me a lot too. And even in that respect, I had a whole conversation with this like functional medicine doctor who used the analogy of being a sports like a race car, and talking about like, look, if you he was like, I'm not going to ask you to not be stressed out, because I understand in your line of work that's not realistic. But if you are this high performance machine, you got to understand that going to the pit is vital. Taking care of yourself between races is vital. And also, literally, the fuel that you put in the car is super specific. You're not going to go put the same fuel in a race car that you do in some sort of like, beat up car or some sort of vintage car or whatever. And like maybe there's certain things about, literally there's your fuel, your nutrition that need to be rethought. So between
Yeah.
that and just the raw delirium of jet lag and touring, like on the more comical side, there's that I'm it's a big passion of mine.
Well, so something I've been thinking about a lot, actually, even this morning, I was rewatching Adam Grant's TED Talk, and he talks about procrastination. I think we may have talked about his book, The Originals. He had given this talk while he was writing the book, The Originals, and he talks about procrastination and precrastination, where it's like people who get really worried like months out before their deadline, and then people who wait until the last minute. I used to think I was the only one, but I would wait until the deadline. Like my best essays, my best poems, I used to perform poetry, my best speeches that I ever gave were ones that were written right before. And I used to almost be afraid that like my brain wouldn't show up for me and it wouldn't come through. And so I would kind of psych myself out, but I thought I hacked something, but I didn't know that really what I was doing was giving myself the space so that I could actually let the creative juices flow so I could come up with the art that I wanted to. And I realized I was touring and I was working overnight shifts and I was interning and I was in school full time and I was doing all these things at the same time. All of my blocks would come up and I couldn't figure out why because I was doing so much. So now it's like the story that I tell myself in that case is I need the time off. If I need to lay on the couch, if I need to take a nap, I'm not even gonna think twice because it's not because I am lazy or I am just like stuck and I can't figure it out. It's that I have to trust that my brain and my subconscious is just doing the work so it can show up for me. Where have you found your biggest ideas come from?
It's weird. There's a few things that I thought of while you were talking. One, I'm weird also in the sense that if I give myself the whole day to work on something, you would think that it's like, oh, I'm taking care of myself and I'm allowing myself to have the mental space to create da da da, I will not work well on that day. For some reason, I function best when I have a few different things going on. And while I'm doing one thing, my mind is anticipating the creative part of the day. And when I get to that part of the day, it's like I can't wait to get there, and I'll be better with my music then. But even that is a delicate balance, because if sometimes the work part of the day, which will be, calls, emails, and managing projects and that kind of stuff, sometimes that bleeds into my time, and it just becomes, or there's unexpected stress stuff there. And, on the flip side, I think the toughest part of the sort of like, multi-hyphenate, whatever kind of life that I lead now, is sometimes flicking the switch between admin time and creative time can be really, really tough. And, I'll go from a bunch of hours of taking care of my label and projects and, just managing things that are in the works, to then walking into my studio and thinking, cool, now I'm gonna create, but my brain is still going. And, it's some days it just comes better than others. But I also wanted to mention, to what I was saying earlier about learning to allow myself a certain balance, and no longer seeing any kind of like nourishing of the spirit as something that I needed to earn or whatever. It's funny talking about that now, because now there's this whole wellness thing that has been fully co-opted in a kind of capitalist way. Like, the wellness industrial complex is a whole thing. And wellness is something that's sold, and people are like, pamper yourself, buy this 40, $90 mask, and pamper yourself, use this brain dust or whatever else that may or may not do something. So it's, when I'm talking about times in my life when I was more of a workhorse that didn't understand that I needed to like allow myself certain breathers, that hadn't started yet. Now wellness has turned into kind of a caricature of itself. And I think it's just kind of up to us to figure out what works for us and what doesn't. And by the way, if some sort of like whatever pixie dust
I know
placebo,
exactly what you're talking about too.
If that makes you feel good for placebo reasons, then by all means use it. It's totally fine. But I think, at the end of the day, whether it be nutrition or supplements or any kind of activities or whatever, ultimately a big part of all that work is learning to like listen to yourself and
Absolutely.
trying certain things out and be like, do I feel better when I do this or do I not? Or is it just something that I feel like doing because it's fun, that which is fine too. You know what I mean? Like, I've always been a big proponent of just fun and silliness. I don't want to describe myself as too much of a workhorse, as if to come across like someone that also is all work and no play, because I find great joy in very minuscule moments of the day. And I think it's, maybe one of the first things I kind of figured out for myself when as I started dealing with like a heavier stress workload, is how much I enjoy little nuggets of silly. I really value silliness and anything that'll make you smile and laugh. And like, I can't overstate how much I'm fond of anything in that department.
Well, it's really amazing to hear you say that too, because you got into this field as a child. So it's like you have almost kept a relationship with your child self throughout your career, which is so important because so many people lose their inner child as they grow up or as they become adults. And it's like you end up losing what you knew gave you joy. And I actually just recently, I was telling my mom, I've been cultivating this relationship with my inner child lately. I've been talking to her, I've been writing to her. And I also started my career very, very young. I was just asking my mom, like, what are the things that I did when I was a kid that I did for fun? Like, I remember using like a voice recorder and like telling creepy stories and like making up these stories and making up these worlds, or painting or writing poetry, all of these things. And I realized like we should have never let go of those things, or I should have never let go of those things, because that was the purest version of what allowed me to become who I am today. And yeah. Hearing your story and how young you started, I wanted to ask, because I know you get this title of, you know, you were a child prodigy so often. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that was your natural talent or this connection that you had with yourself? Or was it more the nurture of your family and the environment that you were around? Or what was that balance?
It's definitely both. I think as far as like natural talent, at least for myself, that's a small piece of it. I think a lot of whatever led me to, you know, success or whatever, it was just hard work. And but also hard work, but also respect for the arts and music, and, you know, taking that passion to heart, you know, and being even like putting my whole heart into it, being invested in it, caring about it. And I think that's like, that's something that's stayed very important to me too, where it's like, it's never been about finding success for me. It's always been about, I love DJing. I love this culture of hip hop that birthed so much of the things that I've been able to do throughout the years. And even, you know, now that I make a lot of electronic music and house music and other things, it's still from the lens of hip hop culture. And I, you know, I'm passionate about where that comes from, where it's going, trying to play a role in steering where it's going, and doing it hopefully in a way that's respectful of everything that comes with it, you know? And if I can be successful, great. But it was never tied to like a dollar amount or some sort of, I don't know, some sort of title or whatever. It was just, you know, trying to see where I can take this thing that I'm passionate about.
Well, so then how do you personally define success, if not the traditional way?
I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm never really satisfied. That's why I never really stop, is I never feel like I've fully reached success. I think success is completely relative. And you know, I do think that it's important to, you know, enjoy the moments while they're there. On most days, I'm a pretty upbeat, happy, cheerful person. I'm not trying to say that I'm never satisfied, or that I'm like, you know, that I don't actually savor the successes as they happen. But there's just something in me that's like, I'm not done.
If you find the thing that you love, can you actually ever be done?
Probably not. Probably not. And so hopefully you find the thing that you enjoy partaking it, and then every day is great, you know, because you're just doing that thing that you love. Like I'm very aware that I have an unusual situation where I found this thing that I love at a young age, and I still care about it at the age of 38. So most people go to school and then try to figure out jobs that they want to do. And nowadays there's much more openness to, you know, sort of non-traditional career paths. And I'm glad there is, but I just kind of stumbled into this thing at a young age, and luckily I still enjoy doing it. But you know, it's this whole adventure started with me putting in hours and hours every day, like an athlete, and, you know, trying to get as good as I could, and then entering competitions, winning stuff, going back to work, losing stuff, going back to work, winning more stuff, and sort of like, you know, figuring it out as I went. And it's funny, because there was a point through those adventures, even as I was, you know, in that earlier part of my career, when it was mostly centered around these competitions, that like I was already starting to become aware of like the story and like the path that I was on and kind of imagining, and it would help me feel more okay about the times that I lost battles. 'Cause then it would be like, yeah, okay, I lost that one. But then next year I come back and I win two of them, and that's even iller. And then you just see it and then you make it happen. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't stay too hung up on the loss. It's kind of that whole idea of like you have to learn how to fall down. It's, you know, the whole idea like everybody falls down, but you get back up. And like, what do you do next? You know what I mean? So I
What do you
tried to
think is the
never.
thing that keeps people from getting back up?
I mean, you know, we all have our fears and we all have our embarrassment or whatever. So if you know, if you fall down and it sort of bursts your bubble or it makes you feel deflated, I think it's normal to sort of stay on the floor for a certain amount of time and be like, damn. But you know, then you sort of you muster up the strength to get up again and think, all right, well, what can I learn from this? Where did I mess up? Or is it just chance? The stuff that I was doing, you know, DJing on vinyl in those days, if the needle skips in the middle of a short routine, short performance, that, you know, that's out of my hands. Like I had the, so I won the first big championship that I did, and then the second one I lost. But during that one, there was a piece of my mixer that flew off mid-performance, and also some stuff about needle skipping. And I was just like, well, I mean, what can I do about that? I just try to get, you know, to recover and get to the end of my little set. But like, that's just gonna happen sometimes. So, you know, I had built up all these expectations of winning this second title, and when I didn't, it became a question of, all right, things are not gonna go the way that I plan them out, or there's, you know, there's certain things that are gonna be out of my control. But what can I do to still continue down this path of, you know, trying to excel in my field? And is there certain things that I can tweak in a different way the next go around?
Was there anything your parents or your older brother at the time would say to you in those moments? And did any of their advice stick with you till now?
Well, so my brother was, you know, very active in my career right from the start. Just him being older and him being a musician already, he was playing in bands, you know, in the time that I was starting to mess around with DJing. So he had a musical ear and he was able to give me feedback. And he was also even just kind of like a coach for me. Like he would help me make a lot of decisions, you know, should I do this thing or that thing? And we would talk about it together and decide. So I can't, you know, I wouldn't even know what to single out from things that he told me, you know, back then, because we everything was kind of like decided by counsel together. My parents was they were just supportive in general, and you know, if I won something, they'd say great. If I lost something, they'd say don't worry about it. You know, we still love you, kind of thing. But I don't think it was like career lessons. My parents are intellectuals and literary more than anything. So the whole idea of, especially in those years, competing and making a name for myself in the music field or participating in hip hop in general, that wasn't really their world. But the fact that they are on the sort of literary side of things, they just kind of had a, you know, they had a respect for the arts in general. I stumbled into this music thing. They certainly didn't really understand what scratching was specifically and why one scratch is better than another scratch. So they didn't even try to give me advice on that stuff. But I'm lucky that they respect music. And when they found out that I was doing something that was getting some sort of notice around town, and there'd be little write-ups about me in the Montreal papers that would say, there's a kid, he scratches, it's crazy. They would just say like, well, okay, this is clearly this is something that's special for you, you know. So if anything, you know, my dad had a talk with me where he was like, you got to keep your grades up, you know, because I was a good student. And he was like, you know, I don't want that to take the back seat. But he was like, if you keep your grades up, then you can do this stuff. But a lot from that point on, a lot of it was just kind of like me figuring things out as I went along. And we're talking about my teenage years. There's a lot of things that happened since then. Then after a couple of years of doing those things, of participating in these championships, that sort of scene that was very active and fruitful for many years fizzled out, and people weren't interested in DJ competitions anymore. And a lot of my peers and friends were older than me, and they decided to do other things or get a regular job. And then that started a pattern of something that would happen every couple of years in my career since then, which was, okay, what am I going to do next? Or how do I keep going? How do I sort of reinvent what I do or add a new layer to what I do that can make it interesting again and continue down a path? And there's for a lot of parts of my career, there wasn't really a lot of comparables. Like, there wasn't really a lot of other DJs' paths that I could look at to follow, because by that point, this sort of like really technical turntablism and scratch DJing was just kind of its own field, its own branch that was separate from the tree. When I decided I wanted to produce music or mix hip hop and electronic music or all these other things, that was kind of just leaps of faith. There was few other DJs at that time that I could look at and say, let me do what that person did. Because DJing was just kind of going through identity crises in those years. And I had to just try stuff out.
Hi there. If you find our work beneficial and you want to support how we build our company at your service, you can subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/nor. It's usually personal writings, and as I build a community on there, hopefully more. Your support is how we build. I also curate a weekly newsletter of all the things I'm benefiting from and enjoying that week. Anything from what I'm reading, watching, listening, buying, and more. Like most things, I keep it personal. You can subscribe to it at nortagori.com/newsletter. Now back to the story. It's hard because you have to pioneer, essentially. But you have said before that, the music industry, and for someone in your position, the career lifespan is typically about 5 years. And the biggest challenge is maintaining longevity and staying relevant for a long time, being able to continue producing, working, doing what you were doing. This idea of consistently reinventing yourself, I think, is not only something that you have had to perfect in a way all of these years, but now with everybody kind of doing this independent thing, being entrepreneurs, trying to build their own brand, trying to build their own story, we're now seeing what it actually looks like to reinvent yourself so that you can continue to like pursue this career. But I feel like there's like this give and take, this push and pull of reinventing yourself for others and reinventing yourself to challenge yourself, and realizing that when you do it for yourself, you're gonna still maintain success. But especially with social media, like, it's so easy for us to figure out what the hack is so that we can stay relevant, but you lose yourself in that. Is that something that you have seen? And if so, how does that compare to your experience?
For sure. And I think in recent years, people are obsessed with the pivot, and even like,
Yes, especially
oh man.
now.
Yeah, I mean, understandably, with lockdown, a lot of people have had to figure out other ways to do what they do. But it's such a buzzword, and like you mentioned, with social media, there's a lot of sort of copycatting, and people, it's, I mean, these platforms are even made to make people feel insecure, or make people feel like they're not doing the right thing,
Or
and you're
enough.
or enough. Or, there's a lot of scenarios of like, oh, well, all these other people are doing this thing that's working. Should I be doing it? And those are really important questions when you have a career in the arts, or when you have a career that stands for, certain things, whether it be, a certain type of history of music, or also, even just like, I think as musicians and creatives, like there's values, like moral values that are tied to what we do. You can look at a certain artist and be like, oh yeah, that person really stands for innovation. That person really stands for integrity. That person kind of stands for doing that thing that's hot at the moment, but they could do it time after time. And it's important to be aware of what works for you and what you stand for when you're looking at a choice and thinking, do I want to do this thing? Whether it be like, do I want to start a TikTok challenge? Do I want to do, sponsored posts for this or that beverage? Do I want to also, organize some sort of fun contest on socials? Or do I want to just stay, in the lab and create weird music and not participate? There's no right or wrong. It's just a question of like, well, does that make sense for you? And so to me, whenever people ask me like, what's some advice for someone who's starting a career in music or even some sort of creative career, a lot of times I tell people like, one of the first things you need to figure out is like your own identity, what it is that defines who you are, what you do, why people will come to you. And the more you can get a keen sense of what that is, the more you can build on that. And then it's the fun part. Then it's fun to say, okay, well, this is what I stand for, but this one sort of iteration of what I've done for the last couple of years, it's getting old. Let's think of a new way to, rethink what it is that I do, but it has to still make sense with the story and who I am and what works for me, you know?
It's a privilege almost to think about it through that lens because we are in a space where evolving works in our favor because that's how we've been able to continue the work that we do. I often think about how, like, your typical 9 to 5 or your typical education system, we were trying to basically create a community of factory workers. Like, that's how our education system was put in place. We wanted people to like be able to listen to rules, to be able to like work X amount of hours. And we haven't really evolved from that. But now, if you are in a creative space, evolving is kind of part of the process and it's something that you look forward to. I was thinking about how so many people are actually really afraid of changing their beliefs and evolving their values, changing their career path. People are so comfortable where they are, and the idea of changing compromises what they knew to be true to themselves. But it's like you almost have to be forced into a position like now where you have to kind of look yourself in the mirror and say, who am I? Who am I trying to serve? And what am I doing that compromises my values or my code of ethics or whatever it is? How did you build what that checklist looked like for you? And when it evolves, what is usually the source of that?
Honestly, a lot of it is trial and error. There's certain things that I've tried over the years that didn't work. I think what's important is also just kind of being able to be honest with that along the way and say, all right, we tried that. Maybe my fans will only buy so much of this type of merch, even though that works really well for another DJ. Or maybe my fans, don't want to see me do this sort of thing, but they like when I do that sort of thing. And just at least if I'm able to absorb that information as it goes, then there's a way. It's all about a balance between what you feel like doing and what resonates, because at the same time, no artist wants to feel like they're at the mercy of the consumer or the audience. You want to just do what feels great for you. But sometimes along the way, you try something and you go, eh, that didn't work. And the thing that's funny is a lot of times the audience is right. It's funny because the audience a lot of times also doesn't actually know what they want. You know, like certain kinds of musicians, there's certain artists that make like one classic album and their whole career, their fan is like, make that album again. And you don't wish that on anyone. Like my favorite artists reinvent themselves consistently, but they do it in a way where you can still tell it's them all along, right? It's not really interesting when someone just makes the same album over and over again. But when, you know what I mean? But when you get someone that touches on a bunch of different styles, but you know, like when you get those sort of like David Bowie, Prince type of artists that touch on so many things, but every step of the way you know it's them, that's the thing that a lot of us, I think, aspire to.
Do you feel like you have been able to do that in your career?
I mean, in terms of variety of projects, I think so, because I get to, you know, I make records with rappers, I make house tracks, I make some electronic records that do quite well commercially, and I make other ones that are weird and don't sell much. And I'm stubborn, and I really just do what I like, for better or for worse. And so, yeah, I'm glad that I've been able to, you know, have that elbow room or wiggle room to do a bunch of different stuff. And hopefully, people can check out what I do and feel like it all comes from the same person. Sometimes I doubt it. Sometimes I'm like, does this even make sense? But yeah,
But they
I don't
let
know.
you know
Yeah, for sure.
because they can
And
always tell.
yeah, I think so. I think so. And I'm sure that, you know, and there's been some misfires along the way, and there's a handful of records that I, you know, maybe wouldn't have put out if I could go back in time, but also who cares?
Yeah,
You know,
totally.
it's just also just important to make things that come from the heart. And if you're having fun and if it comes from the heart, that feeling is contagious and people will get sprinkles of that and be drawn to it. And I think that applies to not just DJs and musicians. I think if you're, you know, a public speaker, or if you have a brand and create product, whatever, like I think if you're making things that you're passionate about, there are people that will come to you for that.
Yeah, I mean, people are hungry for. I don't say authenticity as much anymore. I say consistency. We're
Yeah.
hungry for like the consistent intention, knowing the why and understanding where people are coming from.
Yeah.
Something I really admire about you is that you along your career collected a lot of figurative older brothers, and now you have become an older brother for so many people, so much so that you have your own label and you literally sign people that you are hoping to help and assist and push their careers forward. What responsibility comes with being the mentor and being the leader and guide?
As far as responsibilities, you know, some of it is just being present, being available, you know, just getting on the phone and having conversations with the people that might look at me or some of my peers for guidance. And I had to figure that out through time, you know. Like you mentioned, when I was first starting off, there's a bunch of other DJs and peers who were older who really did take me under their wing and who really did give me a lot of their time and who literally let me into their houses and would play me records I didn't know and help me understand, you know, this beautiful, rich lineage of music and say, this record sampled that record and this happened because that happened before. And I would just be like, oh wow. And you know, and learn from that. And then came a point in time when I realized like, whoa, I am now at the age that so and so was when they would give me all, you know, an entire day of their time. Am I doing this for people too? And it took me a little while to even learn to rejig what I was doing to let other people into my life too, and then to, you know, make time for others more. And you know, I remember in the earlier years of Fool's Gold, you know, the label's 14 years old now, so we've been doing this for a while. And in the earlier years, you know, we were just kind of figuring stuff out as we went along. I mean, we're still figuring stuff out as we go along, but we were signing a lot of our friends' records and just putting stuff out that just was literally all around us. And a lot of it resonated with people right away. Maybe in the beginning, I didn't fully understand that part of my role as this sort of label head was also to sometimes talk to the artists for no specific, you know, with no specific agenda, for a conversation, or and to understand that sometimes they're going to be pissed off for a reason that doesn't make sense, and they might be pissed off at me and my partners for reasons that don't make sense because they need to be mad at someone. And that took a while to sort of like learn how to navigate and to even allow those feelings to be expressed. Because at first, you know, we really fashioned Fool's Gold as an artist-friendly label. We right from the start, we let all the artists keep ownership of their masters. We never did publishing deals. We had a short-lived publishing joint venture, and I think we signed two people to it. So it may as well have never happened. And we approached everything as partnership deals. So when an artist would be upset and sometimes at us, you know, it at first it took a second to understand even how to navigate that even internally and be like, why is this person pissed off? I'm actually on their team. Like I'm not. And there was a point in time where, you know, artists used to just not have much information about the record business. And then when the internet flourished more and more sort of information was shared, there was also a trend of like you as the artist and you as the manager have to fight for your artist's rights and don't let the label take stuff from you, which is totally justifiable in a whole ton of scenarios. But we were doing these partnership deals where we weren't really taking stuff from anyone. And there was kind of this culture for a little while of artists just being like, well, I gotta fight for myself, which is totally fine, but sometimes it wasn't really justified, you know? And yeah, I think it took a while for me to learn to just kind of like let those conversations happen and let someone be upset, even if I didn't think they were right, just because it's not my place to say, no, you're wrong, because artists have to be artists. And if I'm gonna put my label boss hat on, it's not my place to try to win an argument sometimes, you know? So I had to get used to that and to not try to get hung up on right or wrong and just be like, okay, I get it. What could we do? And just talk through things, you know? But you know, also with regards to Fool's Gold, this is a company that started off as a record label, but right from the start also became an events company, a merch and retail company, and essentially a lifestyle brand. And my partners and I, none of us have any business training, none of us have any MBAs or whatever, none of us are trained in marketing, let alone finance. And there was a bunch of mistakes along the way, and there's a bunch of lessons along the way. And there's a bunch of times where we had to just figure out how to get ourselves out of dead ends and contractual disputes and this and that. But one of the things that I really learned through all those obstacle courses is at the end of the day, everything's a conversation. And I think for a long time, I was really intimidated by business. Because again, like I mentioned earlier, I don't come from a business family. My parents almost look down on money. My parents don't value money. So even when I started making money as a DJ, I didn't even really want to think about it. And I'll just kind of park it and be like, that's not think about it, you know? But when I'm running a company and we have salaried employees and projects to fund and all this kind of stuff, at one point I had to sort of try to figure this stuff out and get better at it. And yeah, when there would be like business disputes with distributors and, you know, or another label that licensed the record, and then some, this one country's rights conflict with another country's rights and all that kind of stuff with distribution. Now, it's at first it'd be like, how the hell are we going to figure this out? But then, yeah, a lot of that stuff is just conversations. And luckily, I've had, I've tried to pick good lawyers, managers, people like that around me that can act as advisors. But at the end of the day, not to toot my own horn, but I've had to figure a lot of that stuff out myself too. But
Yeah.
as you know, after going through a couple of those rounds of sorting out messes, that's when I kind of figured out, like, okay, well, there's gonna be these business disputes or business headbutting situations. But if you approach it like a conversation and just say, look, this is where I stand on this issue, and this is where I'm not willing to budge, but here, if we have to yield there, fine. What do we need to do to figure this out? Eventually, knock on wood, I hope we don't, fold tomorrow, but eventually, you can usually figure out
Yeah.
a way out of a situation.
It's a lot of trusting yourself to know what's best for you and what's best for your team and company, because it seems like such a simple realization, but I think it's one that takes many people, myself included, a long time to get to, which is literally that no one has the answer. No one knows what's right or wrong. No one knows what's best. So you have to be able to have a good enough relationship with yourself and your intuition to follow that path. And you're right, trial and error, you see what works and you learn those lessons and you keep that open mind and heart. You mentioned briefly your relationship with money and your parents' relationship with money. I find this so fascinating because you don't take a salary from Fool's Gold. And this is a huge business that, like, you do because of your love for this work. And you deal with all of these business disputes, whatever it is, the things that come with life and the things that come with running a business. Is that viewpoint that your parents had part of the reason that you decided not to take a salary?
No, it's more that that's just kind of what makes sense for the company. It might look like a huge business, but it's an independent business. If there was, if we were rolling on money, then sure, I'd pay myself. But I make my money as A-Track. I earn my living DJing, making remixes, putting out music, doing brand deals. And Fool's Gold is, a passion of mine and something that also allows me to create things with my friends, literally out of our bare hands. But yeah, we're an independent company and I haven't taken a salary. And I think I've mentioned that in interviews, which is probably where you found that. And it's still true. I hope that one day Fool's Gold, makes a ton of money and we can all give ourselves even more money. But, in the meantime, that th this is a sort of like a way to organize my various, businesses that make sense, where I'm able to earn the living that I'm happy with doing my music and DJing stuff. And for Fool's Gold, there's just kind of always something else to prioritize. So I kind of I don't like insist on taking money out of the company when there's always other things that could really help us grow.
Hi, I hope you're enjoying the storytelling session. I just wanted to share something with you. If you're looking for a good deed opportunity these days, my family has been working to alleviate local homelessness for over 10 years. We have a foundation called I See You, and we make care packages for people experiencing homelessness. We make family food bags with food staples and give out grocery gift cards to families in need and more. Everything is done by donation, and 100% of the money goes towards community members in need. If you'd like to donate, you can through Venmo at ISY Foundation or PayPal to contact@isyfoundation.org. If you or someone you know is in need in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area and could use our help, please DM on Instagram, ISY Foundation, or shoot us an email. Now back to our story. It's so funny. We do completely different things, but I feel a very interesting parallel to your career path, and that like most of my income personally has always come from speaking or brand deals or whatever it is, but it's never actually really come from journalism. Actually, the stories that I tell, like for the most part, I'm paying for the production. I'm paying to like put these stories out. And I thought the other day, I was like, I can't tell if I'm upset with the fact, like, shouldn't I be able to like make money off of the thing that is my main thing, my purpose, the thing that allows me to live in purpose? But then I realized we have like figured out a way to live sustainably and pursue the things that we love and pay for being able to do that work. If that ends up being the thing that makes the profit down the line, then that's great. But I still feel really lucky that we get to do, you know, things that don't compromise our values, that I still really, I love speaking. I love the brand deals that I do. I really appreciate and I love doing all of those things. So it's like not taking away. I find that this is like actually quite an interesting business model for independent storytellers. And I think that now in the direction that we're moving in, where, you know, especially in media specifically, it's very rare that you can make an actual living wage working as a journalist. There's so many freelancers now trying to kind of figure it out. But what have you learned from this business model, and how has it redefined what success looks like to you as a person?
Well, I think what I've learned is it's similar to your situation too, with doing some journalism work for free, or even investing some of your money to make that work possible. You know, sometimes it can really make sense to have certain part of your activities that aren't lucrative, but that create a larger story, or that create a platform that extends your reach, or that makes you stand for even more things. And then you're able to go and monetize that, you know? That's kind of, fool's gold, for, you know, I think makes what I do also more interesting compared to if I was just A-Track, the DJ and producer, without a platform. I value being able to have certain other artists and records tied to my name, which are things that I've developed with Fool's Gold, or even booking certain artists at Fool's Gold Day Off. That just, it kind of makes my wingspan bigger in a sense. So I think it's definitely possible to have certain activities that don't pay directly. By the way, when I do a remix, I barely make money off of it. When I put out my own song, I might make money off of it. One of the songs that I've made that is most famous is my remix for the Yeah Yeah Yeahs' Heads Will Roll. I got a flat fee for that in 2009, and it wasn't a lot of money. And then if it goes platinum or whatever, I don't make a royalty off it. I got paid once, and that's it. But that's,
I will say that is how I was introduced to you, by the way.
A lot of people. Exactly. It's a calling card. That song is a calling card. And if I play my cards right, then I can go and make money off of other things. Or even to take money out of the conversation, I can go and further my path and do other interesting projects that that are set up differently, you know, using that calling card.
It's really reassuring and refreshing to hear. It almost feels like playing a game in your brain to analyze what your relationship with money is. Because so much of us feel right now, especially, that like, you know, we're fighting to get paid fairly, we're fighting for credits. Mm-hmm. It's almost like more about the principle and the fact that like people are taking advantage of you than actually wanting the money in your bank account, especially in spaces where you're not making that much to begin with. So it's this tricky balance. I mean, have you gotten to a point where you're comfortable with your business model and you're trusting of your business model? And what would you say to people in a situation like mine where you're kind of going back and forth and figuring out how you should feel about it when sometimes it's the principle of it?
Yeah, I mean, look, I also think it's super important to know your worth, and I agree with you that, like, even in present times and with freelancers especially, it's important for a lot of people to just ask to get paid for their work. And
Yeah.
there's been a lot of there's been many, many years of, certain people kind of like milling someone else's brain for ideas and then running with that stuff and not compensating them. So I'm not saying that interns should work for free and consultants should work for free or any of that kind of stuff. But what I'm saying is there is a way to figure out some sort of, pie chart or whatever when you're doing many different things, where as long as it makes sense, maybe one part of your activities either doesn't bring in money or brings in little money, but extends your reach. And then there's another part of what you do that's monetized and that benefits ultimately from that one thing that, that isn't really paid for, because that reach goes and gets you more work. So, every scenario is different, and again, it's important at the also to know your work and to not let people walk over you. And it's good to just, consult other people in the field that you're in, because there's a lot of industry standards, and if it's standard for one kind of thing to be done for, lower money, and another kind of thing to be the cash cow, then you can kind of get ingest that information and be like, okay, cool. How do I make sure that I get enough out of the cash cows that I can go and do these other things that I enjoy doing that pay less?
Exactly. What role does gratitude play for you in this process?
The older I get, the bigger that gratitude is present in my life. I think the first 10, 15 years of my career, everything was just moving really fast. And I was just trying to figure stuff out. And, I would exhaust myself and I would just kind of like run, to the next thing, try to figure out the next thing. And I don't regret it at all, because that is the foundation that I still build on top of now. But I think the more time goes by and the more I'm able to sort of take little moments to breathe and look at what's around me, I also look back and think that thing was really special, that thing was really cool, or that person really blessed me or changed, gave me a perspective that I still keep in my head when I make certain decisions, all the way to the present, to like, if I put a song out and the day of, a lot of people are enjoy it, I'll feel gratitude that day too. So it's not even just looking back. I'll just be like, wow, this thing today was really cool. And then I go to, okay, on to the next. But I do think it's important to cherish those moments, because I'm kind of a one-man band. Like I have a great team around me, and I'm not trying to say that no one else is responsible for what I do, but like most of the time, it's just kind of me putting my work out there and hoping for the best. So, as opposed to some sort of job within an organization where I would get a bonus or or a nice note from my boss that would say, "You crushed it." I'm my own boss, so I gotta, tap myself on the back sometimes and say, "That went well."
More than sometimes, I think you have to do that often. You just kind of have to like keep that mindset.
I don't look down on 9-to-5 jobs at all. I don't look down on someone that works for someone else.
Totally.
All that stuff is perfectly fine. And punching the clock and our work doesn't define us. And even that's something that I try to remind myself too. Like, music's been such a huge part of my life, and I gotta remind myself sometimes that like that's not my whole life though. Like being a living, breathing human on this planet also involves other things than scratching records. You know what I mean?
Well, but what have you learned in your recent healing journey? What have you learned about yourself when you are, you know, whether in therapy or meditating or sitting in silence, whatever it is, what are the things that you've learned about yourself that you know you can feel okay about?
Yeah, I do therapy. I don't do meditating. I'm trying to start. There's a few things. I think one thing that I learned about myself in recent months, as the whole sort of world stopped spinning around me, and you know, the circus kind of went on break during COVID, that, you know, in a sense, like, I think, like, I'm definitely more sensitive than I think I am. I think, like, I tend to, like I mentioned, sort of, I'm able to tune out a lot of things. I'm able to just keep the machine going. I'm an Aries. I'm literally a ram. I just push through things and eventually figure stuff out. And I don't think I've ever been, I don't think that I ever saw myself as insensitive per se, or a robot or whatever. But I think I'm actually even, I do think I'm more sensitive than I thought I was. When everything stops and there isn't a flight to go run and catch or a distraction, right, when everything is silent, I'm just sort of like, oh, that hurt, like a little more often than normally. And then aside from that, what else have I learned? I mean, kind of what I was saying earlier in our conversation about, like, stop, like, no longer trying to, like, rationalize everything, and no longer trying to, like, look at everything. Like, I studied physics in school, right? And, like, I look at everything like a system, and so much of my brain is just like, this happens because that, and then this does this. And sometimes life just doesn't work like that. And sometimes you figure out that thing, that chart, the one thing that caused another thing. There's certain things I'm figuring out from 10 years ago.
You know what
I mean? 15 years ago. Oh, wow. I guess I did feel that way when I was 17. And like, okay. So I'm trying to, like, be less obsessive with, you know, understanding every single thing.
Is there anything you would tell, like, younger Elaine now?
I'm happy with where I'm at. And, you know, I don't have, like, giant regrets. Sure, there's certain situations that I would have handled differently. I think looking back, there's certain situations where I could have been more thoughtful or more lenient or this and that, and look a little bit less of a...
But not from a point of regret. I think, like, no. More so, what would you tell young Elaine, in the sense that to give him comfort, to give him, like, just reassurance that he may have needed being different in a space that he was?
I mean, something as simple as, like, hey, it's going to be fine. Because there's a lot of times that like I mentioned, there's a lot of times where I took leaps of faith. There's a lot of times where I tried things where I would be struggling throughout, and I would just be like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so just to be like, hey, it's actually going to be fine. And, you know, if one thing doesn't pan out, another thing will, and just, like, chill a little bit.
What is it that people don't really know about you? Like, what are you into that people would be surprised to know?
Good question.
I'm asking this personally because the conversations that I've had with you have never really been about music. We've always talked about, like, things that are happening in the world. And that was whoa, that's really cool.
Yeah. So maybe that, I don't know, maybe that I care about more than just scratching. I don't know. I'm not even sure how people perceive me per se, because, like, if anything, there's a lot of stuff that I'm into that are at opposite poles of the spectrum, you know, like even my taste in movies. Like, I can be very fond of sort of artsy films and kind of whatever, like, abstract David Lynch kind of stuff. But I'm also, like I mentioned earlier, very much into silly things and, like, really into, you know, the entire canon of Will Ferrell. And so someone might think that I'm into one side of that spectrum and be surprised I'm into the other side. I don't think it's particularly surprising or interesting, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what people think of me. I'm a kind of a stubborn artist, and like a lot of what I do is just based off of instinct and what feels right to me. And that might sound paradoxical because a DJ's job is to be a servant to the people and to give people a good time based on maybe what they want. And I don't really give into that much. And that part of that also means is like, I'm not even sure what the hell people expect from me, but I just keep at it based on what I'm passionate about. And apparently there's enough people that are okay with that. By the way, it could be better. Like there's plenty of DJs that, or producers or label heads or whatever that are more successful according to certain metrics or whatever. But the fact that I'm able to do what I want is that you asked about success. That's my definition of success. The fact that I can build a whole life around doing things that tickle my fancy, literally, like just things that tickle me. And also, if anything, pay respects to what came before me and try to keep a certain code of integrity and honor with, the artists and communities that birthed the culture that I'm now able to participate in.
You've mentioned that you've embraced kind of this non-verbal code of ethics of hip hop. What exactly did that teach you?
Hip hop, especially 90s hip hop, when I was growing up with it, hip hop teaches you to not copy other people. Don't bite, right? Biting is forbidden. It teaches you that you can get checked. If you play yourself, someone's going to call you out. It also teaches you that you have a crew and you rep your crew and you stand by them and you celebrate them. And hip hop is built off of this, creativity and subversion. And, like if you think about scratching a record on a turntable or sampling, making like postmodern art, which is sample-based music, and creating these collages and inserting that in the heritage of Black music and Black culture, I've always been very cognizant as a Canadian Jew participating in a lineage of Black music too. Like I'm respectful of that, or at least I try to be. I hope I am, and just kind of understanding my place. That's another thing in hip hop. Know your role, know your place, and if you carry yourself according to those rules, then that respect comes back to you. You know what I mean? And that's I built my whole life around those ideas.
It has definitely worked for you. It's worked for the people that around you that you're teaching, and I feel like it's shown up in your work. This has been so incredible. I always like to
Thanks.
close our conversations by asking, what do you know for sure?
What do I know for sure? That the earth is round.
Okay, that's a good start.
I had a conversation with a flat earther a few months ago.
No.
I did. What do I know for sure? I mean,
I kind of want to know about this conversation.
I'll send you the link. It's online. And you know that how much I care about the music that I participate in and where it comes from, and that if you try your best, something's gonna work for you. And if one thing doesn't work, then tomorrow's another day.
I love that. I appreciate that. It's a great reminder to stay mindful and to just keep going and to be excited about what's to come. What is exciting you these days?
Musically or in general? Like
In
in the
general,
world or
anything and
everything?
everything.
I mean, the world has been very complicated and messy lately. I think there's a lot of conversations that have been happening in recent years that are overdue in terms of giving a voice to people that used to not be acknowledged as much, you know what I mean? So whether it be conversations like the Me Too movement or Black Lives Matter, or all those things, I'm glad that a lot of those conversations are given more weight and respect. Although I think there's, you know, still a lot of work to do. So in the world at large, you know, that feels like something that's going in the right direction. In the world around me, in my little universe, I'm excited about music that I work on. I'm excited at the thought that at some point COVID will pass and I'll be able to play music for people again and do the thing that I love doing. I'm excited to try to make the most of my time at home and spend time with my turntables, going back to how I felt when I was first discovering it when I was a kid. But I've also been excited to, you know, be home and like literally like learn how to cook and do like normal things and like not just be this person that's never there.
What do you miss the most about being with crowds of people and performing for crowds of people? And what are you going to appreciate when you're able to do that again?
I just missed like the feeling of it, the energy of it, like just being able to share music that I'm excited about and feel in an intangible way and in a way that you can't even put into words, the energy and the effect that that has on other humans. I just missed that.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for doing this. This was so fun. I learned so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for, I'm flattered that you had me on here.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For more A-Track, you can follow him on Instagram and Twitter at A-T-R-A-K. And if you're into the record label side of things, you can follow Fool's Gold at Fool's Gold Rex, R-E-C-S, on Instagram and Twitter as well. If you'd like to watch the video version of this podcast, it is up on YouTube or Facebook, both/Nor. And to you, our listener, I want to thank you for your listen and support. I'd love to stay connected. Here are some ways I'm telling stories these days. You can text me if you are in the US or Canada. Yes, it is me, not a bot. I also text you intentional daily questions of the day. My number is 301-246-8894. You can follow us on social, on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube at Noor. And on Instagram at AYS. My Twitter, Snapchat, and Clubhouse is N Tagori.